6:05. Good to have you this Tuesday morning. Just
yes,
a couple
sir.
Of days out from Christmas. Still need to do a little last minute shopping.
Yeah.
Jamie, you told us to ask you if you finished your shopping. You told us to ask today.
I'm like really close, 95%.
Okay.
So yeah, I feel pretty good about it.
90, that's pretty good.
Yeah. That's
pretty good.
One is missing. And that is Chris's, but I'll get you in 2020.
I made a gift.
I wrapped it yesterday.
Oh, that's funny.
The second part.
It's the thought. It's the thought.
It's great. I can't wait. It's the anticipation that's going to kill me is what it is.
Yeah.
You might be building it up a bit too much.
I'm down.
Yeah, no, I'm close as well. Okay. I did. It's 6 o'clock. They're asleep. So I did get the boys a electronic drum kit for Christmas. And I was looking at a couple of different ones. And the one that I was looking at initially came with a drum seat, a throne, as they call it.
Yeah.
And as I went to buy it, it was like, don't buy this. We're back ordered. You're not going to get it before Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, well, then I'll go with the other one I was looking at.
Uh-huh.
So I buy the other one thinking that it comes with the seat. It does not.
Mm.
So I need to
go get a seat.
I need to go get a seat.
Okay.
Yeah, but just like some things like that,
that are
pretty obvious that I just got to go pick up. But I
gotcha.
But I'm pretty close as well, so that's nice.
That's nice.
It's nice. It's nice. Now you can relax.
I think I can relax and enjoy some holiday stuff with Olivia today, which will be great.
That's good. Have you guys watched any Christmas movies yet? Is she into that?
She likes The Grinch, not the Jim Carrey, not the first one, but like the
animated. The newer
the
animated
doctor,
one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Paw Patrol Holiday.
Solid.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
We watched that. It's very good.
That. Yeah.
It's very good. Well, look, we're going to have a fun time today. We're going to, talk about Christmas a little bit.
Yeah.
But there are some things that were making news.
Yes.
Including Donald Trump announcing yesterday a plan to build a new class of battleships. Trump-class battleships.
That's right.
These are heavily armed, large surface, combatant equipment, hypersonic missiles, nuclear-armed, cruise missiles, railgun systems, lasers, AI-driven capabilities. In terms of battleships, these would be pretty state-of-the-art.
Yes.
What I find interesting here is that the United States stopped building battleships, at the end of World War II.
Right.
The last battleship was decommissioned in the early 90s. We haven't used battleships.
No.
Battleships are, it seems like, from things that I read from military experts, not the preferred choice of military fighting capabilities anymore.
Right. Yeah.
They have aircraft carriers, but they don't have battleships.
Correct.
Right.
And through the years, they figured out like better ways, best practices of doing things. I don't know. I'm not on the ships, but the naming of it. What are we doing with this self-aggrandizing stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess here's my question at the end of the day. Really. The reality is China has been outpacing the United States in when it comes to the production of these carrier ships.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, again.
And subs too, right?
Well, particularly the aircraft carriers.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they've been building them at such a clip that the United States, we don't have that ability.
No.
We don't have the ports, we don't have the facilities, we don't have the manpower. China does. And they've prioritized that. Well, when it comes to issues like Taiwan, the overarching consensus is that this is going to be an air battle, this is going to be a sea battle, if it comes to that.
Yeah.
If it comes to a war to protect Taiwan's sovereignty, if China comes knocking at the door, or when, I guess if you ask military experts, because it's more of you are going to need this capability in the sea. I don't think that these are going to be ready by then. And quite frankly, when it comes to the carriers, China's been outpacing us anyway. It puts the United States in a tough spot. So I don't know what the rationale is for it here. Nice to have in your tool belt, right, if you need it. But it's a curious decision when it seems like militaries around the world have strayed away from the quote-unquote battleship.
Yeah, he talked about also that the fact that, you know, when he asks for things to get built, it takes years.
Years.
You know. But
I'm pretty sure that we don't even have a place to build these.
That's the issue. We don't. And so that's why it takes so long. And he wants that now. He wants these companies to, you know, build plants here so we can build these things. So it doesn't take so long. When people order a plane, it doesn't take 10 years for us to deliver it.
Right.
You know, I think we should talk about this further in 2026 with, like, our Navy expert and what have you. But some people are saying we don't need these big behemoth ships. We need unmanned ships with large weapons that combats China. So this is a discussion. This is a 2026 problem.
Yeah.
Push that on. Push that over to
2026. Exactly.
Mayor Duggan is set to close out his time in office with strong financial news at his final press conference as mayor. The mayor will announce he's leaving the city with a budget surplus topping $100 million. A recently completed financial audit for the 2024-25 fiscal year shows the surplus grew significantly from a projected $60 million in September to more than $100 million today. And the mayor says the increase reflects disciplined budgeting and decisions made throughout the year. The announcement will be made later on this afternoon at Detroit Public Safety Headquarters alongside Mayor-elect Mary Sheffield and city finance leaders. How the surplus will ultimately be used will be up to the incoming administration, marking one of the first major financial decisions for Mayor-elect Sheffield. So $100 million, leaving, you know, she's got a good start, got a good head start.
That's a head start.
$100 million.
That's a way bigger head start than Mike Duggan had.
Yeah. Much bigger. He came in on a bankruptcy.
He was just out there shaking a can like, help us.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, all right. Now it's go time.
Go time.
Fun fact, I went to high school with Barry Weiss, the head of CBS.
Did you really?
I really did.
Really?
She's younger than me.
Okay.
And so, you know, we weren't friends. Yeah. I know of her. She was behind me at Shadyside Academy in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
She is at the
heart. Shout out Shadyside.
Yeah. Shout out. She's at the heart of this story of what's going on at 60 Minutes. She's the head of CBS News now. Apparently, this whole story was supposed to come out about CECOT and all of the deportees to El Salvador and how they were treated and is that American, blah, blah, blah. She said Saturday night they're going to have to hold it. She reached out to everyone at 60 Minutes, said, you can't play it. We need further reporting. Even though CBS and the reporters say they got statements from Department of Homeland Security, from the White House, what have you, but DHS declined a request for an interview. And so the person who was a part of the story, the reporter says, if the standard for airing a story becomes the government must agree to be interviewed, then the government effectively gains control over the broadcast.
Absolutely.
We go from an investigative powerhouse to a stenographer for the state, which I agree with. And when I went to journalism school, you have to ask for all the sides.
Uh-huh.
And if they decline, that's on them.
Yeah.
But in the midst of all this, Paramount's trying to, you know, take over and make this huge deal, which the president is going to be involved in. And apparently this story was going to be very unflattering with
so
how these people are
they're
treated.
Paranoid. You don't want to, you know, they already had to pay the president money. And they're just paranoid that they don't want to upset.
That's what it looks like.
Uh-huh.
That's the perception.
Yeah.
Barry Weiss says they're going to try and do additional reporting and air it later. But this is blown up.
Wow.
Well, one of the things that Barry Weiss had said was that there was incomplete reporting.
That's what she says. The reporter denies that.
The reporter denies that. Mm-hmm. And the reporter says it went through legal, it went through compliance, it went through all of these avenues, and it was ready to go. Now, here's where I really agree with the reporter. They had been pimping this. They had been
promoting
this
it, yeah.
So that it was something that they were going to show.
Yeah.
Now, you take that away from your audience. Look, we know all about that. If we tell you that we're going to talk about something at, you know, 8:35
yeah.
and we don't, you're going to go, well, what happened to that?
Yeah.
Why am I holding the bag? You said you were going to do something and you
exactly.
didn't do it. So that's a problem in and of itself. But Weiss says that she had a problem with some of the words that were used to describe these people. Are they migrants? Or are they here illegally? Like, some of the fundamental things that she says weren't accurate. So that would have passed compliance. It would have passed legal.
Yeah.
But she says it was incomplete reporting.
That's what she says.
Okay.
Let me try and call her. Let me get
yeah. Yeah. Call her up. call her up. I'm sure she'd love to talk about it.
I'm sure she'd love to talk to us.
Yeah, exactly.
Top of her list.
Senator Gary Peters joins us on the other side. It's Sharon Morning. Well, Lloyd, it seems like there's never a... A lack of things to discuss coming out of D.C. these days.
Oh, no. It's always something going on.
It's always something happening.
Yeah.
And so we thought before we go away for the holidays and we rejoin our wonderful listeners in the new year, We thought it would be best to touch base once again with one of our fine senators here from the great state of Michigan. Senator Gary Peters joins us this morning. Senator, it's great to have you back.
Well, it's great to be with all of you. I hope you're having a good holiday season and Merry Christmas to you.
Now, do you have all your shopping done? You're ready to go here?
Yeah, I think so, you know, but there's always a last-minute item that pops in your head, but I think I'm good to go.
You don't strike me as a gift card guy, though. It feels like you put a lot of work into these gifts.
Yeah, I do. I like to actually think it through a little bit, but sometimes the gift card will work in a pinch.
That's right. Let me ask you this. If there was one person across the aisle that you had to, you had to get a gift for this year, somebody that you maybe don't really agree with most of the time, who would you get it for? What would you get them?
Oh, geez. That's a big question. I don't know. I try to work across the aisle and always work in a bipartisan way. I'm happy to say I have a lot of friends on the other side of the aisle that we get things done. And you know, I think it's just about nurturing those relationships and usually doing something fun is what I would get them, not something related to politics in any way, but build a relationship.
That's very good.
That would be a good idea. You know, and Senator, you're someone with experience in navigating divided government. What gives you optimism heading into next year, to 2026, that concerns you the most? What optimism you have heading into 2026, and then what concerns you the most about going into 2026 with the new Congress?
Well, you know, I want to always be optimistic. And one thing that I'm seeing some progress on, and this is kind of, you know, in the weeds of Congress, but is the appropriations bills where we fund government. That has been a real challenge over the years. But in the Senate, I'm happy to say my Republican colleagues and I have been able to work together. We've passed a number of bills out in a bipartisan way. Now the challenge will be getting them to the Senate floor and getting them passed before the end of January, because as you know, there's it all comes to an end at the end of January. Concerns about a shutdown at the end of January, but I hope that we're able to come together and do it. And I'm seeing very hopeful signs, and certainly encouraged by the conversations that I've been having on both sides of the aisle.
But, and I know this year you had to be pleased with Selfridge and what happened there.
Oh yeah, so pleased. I mean, you know, we've been working on Selfridge for years. We knew we were retiring the two platforms there, the A-10 fighters and the KC-135 tankers, and we were able to get both. You know, I worked aggressively to get those KC-46 tankers. We got a squadron of that next generation of tankers that will probably be around for decades, which keeps Selfridge vibrant and secure. And then, of course, the F-15s, and I've been fighting to get funding in the appropriations bills for those. And then we got a decision this year for the F-15. So having both of those means Selfridge will continue to be a key player in Michigan and our country in terms of natural security.
You know, we've seen this conflict feeling like it's building and building down in the Caribbean with Venezuela. You know, we're hearing reports that now there's a third oil tanker that's being targeted here by the United States. What do you make about this? It does feel like there is some sort of escalation with Venezuela in this administration. Is it warranted? Is it out of reach? What do you make of this?
Well, I'm concerned about it because we have not been briefed as to really what the administration is attempting to do. It has been very difficult to get any kind of transparency. And I sit on the Armed Services Committee. You know, it was just recently, these last week or so, that we were able to finally get information on some of the boat strikes that are occurring right now. It's certainly questionable legal authority, but we also want to have a better sense of what is the goal of the objective here, especially when it comes to any kind of broader conflict, if one should occur in Venezuela. The American people and the Congress need to know exactly what this administration is seeking to do and what that plan is to accomplish it.
Do you see, Senator, us coming to some type of agreement or compromise when it comes to health care?
I hope so. You know, we have not seen the kind of good faith negotiations that I think are essential. You know, I was intimately involved in trying to find a way to have an extension on the ACA credits that are expiring at the beginning of the year. We're going to have millions of people losing their health care coverage come January 1st because it's simply unaffordable for them. We're seeing 200 to 300% increases in their premiums, which people simply can't afford. We need to extend that. We tried to get the Republicans to agree to just an extension while we work out broader reforms. And I do believe we need to have broader reforms. It's not a perfect program. It never has been. We have to come together and make sure we're constantly making it better. But in the meantime, you can't pull the rug out from people and say, well, I'm sorry, you're not going to have any health care coverage while Congress tries to get our act together. So I'm hoping we will have those conversations in a good faith manner. But I'm someone who always works in a bipartisan, unfortunately, I've been really disappointed that there's been talk, but not the good faith element that is absolutely essential to come to an agreement.
What was it with the Republican plan that was a no-go for you?
Well, the plan's over in the House you're referring to, the House plan that they had?
The Senate plan to allocate money towards the HSA accounts.
Oh, in that particular one, I mean, that just simply wasn't going to fix the problem. You know, HSA accounts are certainly, it can be a piece of that, and we should be talking about that. But it's still, had we passed that, people were going to still lose their health insurance, yeah. And they were going to lose their ability to have coverage. So that's not a solution. That's a piece of something that should be part of a broader reform. But we were looking for a way to protect people's health care while we were figuring that out. And that was just not going to make the grade.
So is there a renewed push that when you get back, that's going to be something that's going to be focused on?
Yeah, certainly I'm going to be focused on it. I know many of my colleagues are going to keep pushing it because we have to. And so I hope we'll be able to do that. We've got a lot on our plate with the broader appropriations bills that I just mentioned earlier to get done. But in the meantime, now that we have growing numbers of people without insurance, and because of the big bill that passed earlier in the year, Medicaid at the end of the next year will go away for many people as well. So we're going to have a real health care crisis that we have to deal with. We're already dealing with elements now, but it's only going to get worse, and time is not on our side. So I will certainly, in my last year here in the Senate, I'm going to be working aggressively to try to bring people together on that.
And Senator, for Michigan residents listening right now, what should they be watching closely in Congress, you know, that directly affects their daily lives coming up?
Well, it's really about the cost of living. You know, there's just no question. Prices are high. They're continuing to go higher. We've got tariffs that are impacting prices, and folks think that we're going to see more increases in prices as a result of those. So this is about making life affordable for people, and that should be our main focus. That's why the healthcare aspect of that is a key part of it. If healthcare is unaffordable, that is a serious problem for families. But healthcare is just one element. There are all other aspects that we need to be looking at, and housing in particular. The lack of affordable housing for people is a serious problem, particularly for younger people who are trying to get established, buy a home, and build up equity so that they have some financial security in the future.
Senator Gary Peters, our best to Colleen, your family, for the holidays. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you guys, and we look forward to talking with you in your last go-around here.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be with you, and all of you and your families, happy holidays, Merry Christmas. Look forward to talking to you next year.
That is Senator Gary Peters. We'll take a break. More coming up on JR Morning.
Well, the auto industry is heading into a pivotal moment. After years of rapid change driven by electrification, software, and global competition, 2026 is shaping up to be a year where innovation becomes more visible and more personal for consumers, from smarter vehicles and new manufacturing approaches to how cars are sold and how they're serviced and connected to the next wave of change is expected to move beyond the buzzwords and into everyday driving experiences. It's the subject of this morning's Mobility Makers, brought to you by Bridgestone. Getting people down the road matters, but getting generations down them, that's what really matters. Bridgestone. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more and help us kind of understand what's coming next and what it means for Michigan's role at the center of the global auto industry. We're joined now by Glenn Stevens, Executive Director of Mich Auto and Chief Automotive and Innovation Officer at the Detroit Regional Chamber. Glenn, always great to talk with you.
Well, good morning, team. How are you?
We are well as we get closer and closer to Christmas Day. And when you look ahead at 2026, what feels like fundamentally different about the auto industry compared to where we are today?
Boy, that's a good one. Like, I think the issues that we dealt with, and I kind of look at them in a group, are the same ones we're going to face moving forward. But I think the major difference is how fast things are happening, the speed of innovation, you know, the proliferation of AI across all, you know, our factories, our vehicles. So I think the speed of innovation is really what's driving so much right now.
How do you think the auto industry will fare moving forward with a Trump administration that has deregulated, has done some things when it comes to electrification? It seems like the auto industry is on board.
Well, I think so. I was trying to think of an analogy about what the year was, and it clearly is a roller coaster, but I think it's a roller coaster like Space Mountain in the dark where you don't know where the turn's going to be. And
like that.
Okay, like that metaphor.
I think that's really what we knew there was going to be change. And I just don't, as I've said before, think we understood the magnitude and the velocity of it. But I think, you know, what we know we're dealing with. I think the big question mark is USMCA in the coming year.
I was just going to ask you that. So that's up for renegotiation. It sunsets in July of next year. And there's been so much back and forth between the United States and Canada and with Mexico. So how important is that in a renegotiation going to be? How is that going to shape what this sector of our economy looks like?
Boy, it is absolutely critical. Probably the number one thing next year. I think a lot of things have settled out a little bit, the EV recalibration, some of the supply chain issues. But this trade issue, you know, we trade with Canada and Mexico as a unified block, not just in auto, but in ag and other things. And we're stronger together. So the question is, does the administration keep it intact with modifications that improve it, have unilateral trade agreements on top of it, or walk away from it? And hopefully it's the first one.
Glenn, from Michigan's perspective, where do you see the state leading, you know, manufacturing, mobility tech, batteries, autonomous systems, or something else, maybe entirely?
Well, as you probably know, we put a report out. We do this every 18 months. We call it the state of our automotive mobility industry. And the fact, not hyperbole, not just marketing, the fact is we still are a global leader in so many different parts of the industry. But that's under threat always, and probably more so than ever. So I think for the state to continue to lead, we're going to have to invest in the things we know. And that's the base level economy, the things that companies need, like K-12 education, housing, and things like that. But we're also going to have to get people into the right pathways for jobs. Because, again, the biggest change is the speed of innovation and all these things that are coming at us that are going to change the landscape dramatically.
Glenn, Waymo's here. Do you think there's a time where we're all getting in autonomous vehicles?
Well, I think there's a time. And
it's
certainly
not now.
Well, you may have read about the little snafu they had in San Francisco the other day. And that's technology advancing, and that's the way things happen. But what we think about Waymo coming here is it not only is it a technology presence on the streets of Detroit, but it also can solve some micromobility problems that the city has with transit. That's the hope. A long way from everybody getting into them, but it hopefully will be a technology solution that helps our Detroit, starting with our Detroit ecosystem.
It does seem a little bit over the last couple of years or so, there was a much bigger shift towards the development of electric vehicles. And maybe it's perception, but the advancements of autonomous driving seem to take a backseat. Was that accurate? Does it seem like there was less development on that front? What do we expect from that?
Yeah, sorry. At one point, you may remember, that was the gold rush.
I mean,
you had not just Waymo, but you had Argo AI through Ford. You had Cruise through GM. You had probably a half dozen other ones. And that really got the pullback, primarily, I think, because technology was advancing so fast and it was so difficult. But the pandemic didn't help it either.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of the shift was to EVs. And, you know, the recalibration we've seen there. But listen, technology is going to press forward. The software-defined and enabled vehicle is so, so critical. And if you ask any OEM or look at any OEM, that is where the money's being put right now.
And Glenn, I have to ask you, if you were, you know, talking to a young person today who was maybe thinking about a career in auto today, what 2026 era skills would you tell them they need to start building, like, right now?
So I think one of the most important things we need to address, and I touched this, is we need to do a far better job in our schools and really with people who are reskilling or upskilling with pathways. We don't do a good job there. But make no mistake about it, Lloyd, every job, whether it's a plumber, electrician, somebody working in the automated factory, or somebody all the way up to the cloud, more digital interface skills are going to be required. And we have to be ready to embrace technology, and we have to be ready to have our people ready. And that's going to, I hope, and I think that's what we're going to hear a lot of next year in what is a very pivotal election year for our state.
Glenn Stevens, always great to hear from you. Appreciate you coming on. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thanks. Happy holidays to all of you. Thanks for all the work you do.
Happy holidays, Glenn.
Bye.
Yeah, it's going to be different. And technology is really big in cars. I mean, you know, it's almost like you're not going to be driving a car. You're going to be riding the technology. It's all this tech. And yeah, the Jetsons. Sounds like the Jetsons.
Yeah, I think, I mean, eventually you're not going to be able to outrun it. When is that? We don't know.
Right.
Because like the EVs and all of the apprehension that people had, and rightly so, into whether or not that was going to fit their lifestyle.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to get that with the technology too. I mean, am I getting in a Waymo today? No, I'm not. Will I do it for a video? Sure. I'll put my life on the line for our listeners.
Okay, hold on. You're not putting your life on the line getting in a Waymo. Like, they're used readily in a lot of places.
I don't like
you look
turning over the power to the robots.
Okay.
There's more human error than there is.
Well, that's the problem. That's true, too.
Okay, guys, let's get into the Christmas spirit in the next session here. Christmas songs. I have a favorite Christmas song. I'm sure you guys have one. And there's a list of like 100 best Christmas songs. We'll find out what some of them are next on JR Morning.
You know, I don't really feel like I've gotten my fill of Christmas music this year.
Yeah.
You don't need to turn it up. That's okay. Thank you, Jason. Stop it. No, I'll crank it. Go ahead. Do it one more time. There you go. Give it to the people. I will say, the kids, whenever we're in the car, it's a mixed bag. Like, Jake's like, let's play Jingle Bells. And then he's like, can we play K-pop Demon Hunters? So it's all over the map.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what we've been listening to.
Yeah. But I did come across this list of the best Christmas songs. Billboard put it out. It's the top 100. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not going to go through the top 100.
No.
But if you want to call in and name a song, I'll tell you where it falls on the list. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. Do you have a particular favorite Christmas song, either of you?
No, I like a lot of them. I put them in categories. They're the church songs.
Yeah.
And then there's like Mariah Carey. That's a different category. Uh-huh. For the church songs, I love O Holy Night. And I love it on Christmas Eve.
I like Nat King Cole. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Solid.
I like that.
Celine Dion's All Holy Night came in at number 68 on this list. Very high.
Gorgeous.
Very, very low on the list.
I know, but it's probably the best.
It is.
It's a great song.
It is.
All right, so let's fast forward here. Let's get to the top 10. Now,
no, let's go 67.
Okay.
65. Yeah, well,
okay. At number 10, Billboard says the 10th best Christmas song of all time, this. Donny Hathaway, This Christmas,
yes,
from 1970.
Great. Love it.
Yep.
You agree?
Hang all the mistletoe.
Yeah, I do.
Excellent song.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They say soul pioneer, great songwriter, arranger, musician, perfectly captures the joy and fun blessings that embody the holiday season.
So this was someone's song that he took and he rearranged it.
Mm-hmm.
And made it, because it didn't sound like this. The original didn't sound like this, but he rearranged it. And it's a hit every Christmas.
All right. At number 9, The Kid from Jersey.
I do like this better than the kid version.
Oh, agreed. Yes, yeah. I agree.
Let me tell you who else did a good version of this song. It's the Jackson 5.
Yes, they did. I like Santa Claus is coming to town by the Jackson 5.
They did a good.
Very good. I actually think it's better than Bruce.
Yeah, well.
Although I have a bit of an inherent bias
towards
Bruce.
You got an issue
Bruce.
With Bruce.
I think Bruce is overrated. That's just me. Bruce is overrated. You can email me at chris.renwick@cumulus.com if you've got thoughts on my take on Bruce Springsteen. Let's get to, say it again, Jason, who was it? John? John in Florida. What's up, John? You got your palm tree decorated down there?
Yeah, we just got down here from Michigan, and we won't be back until the summer.
Very good.
I'd like to say my favorite song is I'll Be Home for Christmas. And as a retired Navy captain, I'm dedicated to all my fellow shipmates and all the troops deployed who won't be home for Christmas.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's a good point.
Well, that's really sweet.
God bless you, John. Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Fats Domino's version of I'll Be Home for Christmas checks in at number 85.
Okay.
85.
Wow.
But the Fats Domino version is the one that they have on this list.
Okay.
Another great point, right? It's a wonderful time of year, but you have families that are not complete.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got servicemen and women that are protecting us.
It can also be like
overseas.
A really sad time of year for some people.
Yes.
When everyone's celebrating and having a good time,
right,
or you're alone or whatever. So we think about those people too.
Yeah, certainly. All right. Where do we leave off? Number
eight
on this list. Another great song. Run DMC.
Christmas in Hollis.
Christmas in Hollis, 1987.
This is top 10?
Top 10.
No.
Number 8 on the list.
I don't know about that.
I like it's cool,
yeah,
but
I don't know if it's top 10, though.
All time top 10? Get out of here. December 24th on Hollis Avenue, the dark, when I see
the man chilling with his dog at the park. That's a great song. I agree. I don't know if it's top 10.
Yeah.
But Run DMC Christmas in Hollis checks in at number 8. At number 7. Feliz Navidad by Jose Feliciano.
I love Jose Feliciano.
1970. Feliz
Navidad. Yay!
It's just happy.
Yay!
You just. Feliz Navidad. I'm just driving in the car. I'm just shimmying to this song.
Absolutely.
Driving down the road, listening to Feliz Navidad. Great song. This was dubbed what he calls the first ever bilingual Christmas song. Hmm. Wrote it in the summer of 1970 in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And then at number 6. Brenda Lee's Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree.
Now whenever I hear this, I think of Home Alone.
Home Alone, correct. Isn't that funny? I mean, you take a great song, you put it in a movie, and like,
change, you filthy animal.
Zach.
People are, it's like they equate it to the other thing, other than just the standalone song.
Yeah.
Well, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Number 5. Bing Crosby's White Christmas from 1947. I mean, great song.
Great song.
Classic. Now, what category do you put this in? It's not quite church music, but it's not quite Mariah Carey.
It's in the fun section.
In the fun section?
Yes.
All right, in at number 4.
I love this song.
This might be top song. You're surprised it was number 4, Jason?
I thought it'd be number 2.
Wham, Last Christmas.
So good. And the video?
Video is excellent.
The video is perfect. Yeah.
Yes. Great song. Last Christmas, I gave you my heart. Lloyd, nothing from you here?
No, I love this song.
All right. Hard stop on that. Lloyd ain't singing it.
I better hurry. Get to this.
Number 3, Nat King Cole. Chestnuts roasting. There you go, Lloyd. Open fire. Keep going, Lloyd.
Chestnuts nipping. No.
No.
Jack Frost.
Jack Frost.
Oh, no.
I blew that. I blew it.
Number Jack 2.
Thank you.
Darlene Love. Baby, Please Come Home Christmas.
I like
from 1963.
This is a good one.
Great song.
Good one.
This next one, though.
All right. And number one.
I mean, yes.
Oh, my God.
There it is. Mariah Carey. Oh, I agree. Jason, well done. All right, we'll take a break. 7 o'clock hour. We're coming up. It's Chair Morning. All right, 7 o'clock hour. Couple days before Christmas. Jamie's 95% set on
Christmas
gifts. That's
pretty good, too.
I'm feeling better today than yesterday.
Yeah, so that's pretty good for Jamie.
What do you still need to pick up? Just some loose ends?
Just like loose ends that will be local, and I don't have to go very far, and that's I can nice. Just enjoy the day.
But then that means you don't get to go to Somerset again.
Well,
I mean, that doesn't necessarily
I might be
that,
there on
right.
Friday.
And I think everybody does a little bit of last minute shopping. Just a little bit, like, oh, I forgot this, or I gotta go pick up that, or maybe it's, you know, you gotta go run to the grocery store, even pick up a couple things.
Yeah, because I, you know, my mother-in-law's birthday is the day after Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you know, you can't do the whole, you know, here's your Christmas and birthday present. No, it doesn't work that way.
You gotta have separate
gotta
things.
Have separate. So I don't know if Maria's picked up Mama's.
She probably has. She's very good about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, got a go gift card for the birthday present.
Yeah.
Boom, here's your
birthday present. Right.
Because she sent me out for the Christmas present.
She sent you out for the Christmas present.
For Mom.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Are you saying Marie dropped the ball?
No, I'm not saying she dropped the ball. I'm just, you know, saying that, you know, I'm the ATM, and of course, you know, she could have did it. But
got it. Yeah. I see. Got it.
But, you know.
All right. Well, very good.
Since you're there, just get it.
Just get it. Why not pick it up?
Just pick it up.
Donald Trump announced the formation, the building of these new battleships. The U.S. Navy Trump-class battleships, heavily armed, large surface, equipped with hypersonic weapons and cruise missiles and railgun systems and lasers and AI capabilities. These are would be state-of-the-art fighting machines, and the United States is now set to build these. The United States stopped building battleships, still build carriers, they still build, you know, cruise ships, things like that, but they have not built battleships in the classic sense since after World War II. So this is something that the United States kind of went away from, and now they're going back to it.
Upgrading the fleet sounds good. And I think we should get into it in the new year with one of our experts in the military. I mean, battleships, you're right, Chris, went away after World War II. Now it's more like unmanned amphibious whatever.
Yep.
And they use those aircraft carriers to launch the planes.
Mm-hmm. There has been no funding allocated for this, however. The Pentagon has not allocated funding for this. But Donald Trump says that these battleships will
be
coming.
But he wants 20 of them.
20 to
Sounds
25.
Sounds expensive.
It's a lot.
Real expensive.
Yeah, it's a lot. It is a lot. But, you know, you look down the pipe a little bit. The United States is keeping an eye on China and what they're going to do with Taiwan. And, you know, a lot of military experts say that it could be, there could be, you know, this could be something that gets handled in the seas, in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that, you know, air support wouldn't be included in that, but that's something that they're looking at. And China has outpaced the United States when it comes to carrier ships by a lot.
Yeah.
So it's troublesome in that aspect, but now these battleships, what role will they play? We'll see.
But do you need 20?
I have no idea how many you need. We don't have any right now.
Yeah.
So I guess 20 would be better than zero if you're going to use them.
Okay.
But he said yesterday at Mar-a-Lago at this press conference, like, this is peace through strength, right? That this is not taking action. This is upgrading our fleet. This is upgrading our capabilities to deter potential attacks in the future. We'll see what comes of it.
Well, the Justice Department does, you know, release thousands of new records related to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, including a lawsuit alleging abuse of a 13-year-old at Michigan's Interlochen Center for the Arts summer camp. Now, according to the 10-page lawsuit, the girl identified as Jane Doe claims Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell groomed her over several years, providing financial support and ultimately abusing her. Attorneys say Epstein used his position as a donor to the art school to gain trust and access. The lawsuit was settled in 2021. Interlochen, a prominent performing arts boarding school and summer camp near Traverse City, said in a statement that internal reviews found no complaints about Epstein in their records. Sexual assault advocate Grace French warns that Places viewed as safe havens like schools and camps can unfortunately be exploited by predators. The release of the files underscores the importance of vigilance and survivor support, and advocates urge anyone affected to prioritize their well-being. So this was a suit that's found in the paperwork that they released, but it was settled in 2021.
A Michigan connection.
Yes.
Interesting. Let's not get into the rest of the Epstein hullabaloo.
Oh, yes.
That's a 2026 problem.
Yeah. Well,
for us, anyway.
She's pushing everything in 2026.
I mean, look, you drop something heavy like that before Christmas. It's tough.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, and they're still sifting through it. You know, now
you
asked what would be the ramifications for not releasing all the files. Well, now you've got Democrats saying they want to hold Pam Bondi in contempt.
Contempt, yeah.
Right.
Okay. What is that? Okay. What? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Tremendous. Are we going to get the rest of these files? That's what I want.
I don't know.
And again, I haven't seen anything in these files.
That's earth-shattering, too.
That has been earth-shattering. It's like the JFK files.
Yeah.
It's like everybody thought that there was this thing. Then you get the files and you go like, oh, it's basically that. All the conspiracy goes out the window. Not to say that the victims in this case don't deserve some clarity.
Absolutely.
Not to say that it wasn't the right thing to do to release these files. But I just, there hasn't been anything here that's been groundbreaking to me yet.
Yeah. Everyone's on the GLP-1s. Well, apparently you won't have to inject yourself coming in the new year because they approved the first GLP-1 weight loss pill. Novo Nordisk said Monday it plans to start selling the new pill in the U.S. in early January with a cash price of $149 a month for the starting dose. This is a big milestone and a big deal because a lot of people are on this.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of my friends who are using it, it's a lot of money a month. A $149 a month would be a welcome
absolutely.
For some
people.
Yeah. Interesting.
And I knew, you know, sooner or later, you know, there was going to be a pill form, you know, because, you know, you inject, and some people want to do it. They just don't like needles.
Right.
You know, so
right.
This is another way to help people who need it, you know.
It's a step in another direction for the GLP.
Yep, the others will follow.
All right, it's not Thursday, but we will get to the couch with Dr. Steve Craig coming up next. But first, time for WJR's Business Beat, brought to you by Shelving.com. We rack your world. Here's Jeff Sloan, the founder and CEO of Startup Nation, to spotlight the entrepreneurial tech and startup community on WJR.
Good morning. When it comes to audio consumption, who's the king these days? Well, Edison Research's Share of Ear report for the third quarter 2025 again crowns AM/FM radio as the tops in audio consumption. Share of Ear, which surveys 4,000 Americans annually to measure daily reach and time spent for all forms of audio media since 2015, shows across-the-board dominance for AM/FM radio versus other ad-supported media, with its share of daily time spent at 64% for 18-plus and as high as 70% for 50-plus. And so for those of us in business wanting guidance and direction with respect to where we should spend our ad dollars most optimally to meet and engage our relevant audience, think radio. Arguably, the report's most important takeaway is how necessary AM/FM radio is to media plans focused on audio advertising. Edison shows that the unique daily reach of ad-supported Spotify, Pandora, and podcasts among persons 18-plus stands collectively at 33% share of ear, just one-third of Americans. Adding AM/FM radio to the mix boosts that daily reach to 74%. Cumulus Media, Westwood One Audio Active Group Chief Insights Officer Pierre Bouvard says in an analysis of Edison's finding on Westwood One's blog, "You'll miss two-thirds of America if your audio media plan only has digital audio. AM/FM radio remains the dominant audio platform for marketers," Bouvard says. And yet, given this clear success, the blog goes on to note marketers and media agencies continue to significantly overestimate audience shares to Pandora and Spotify while massively underestimating AM/FM's audience. Advertiser Perceptions, August 2025 study of more than 300 agencies and marketers found that AM/FM's perceived audience daily share was just 26% versus the actual 64%. So there you have it. Think advertising, think AM/FM radio. I'm Jeff Sloan, founder and CEO of StartupNation.com, the source for everything you need to start and grow your own business. And that's today's Business Beat on the great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR.
Well, the holidays are a wonderful time spent with friends and family, but there probably are some touch points that you get in these times. You know, yes. Are you going to talk about politics at the dinner table? Can this person stay over? What kind of gifts are you getting? There are all kinds of things that can happen in the holiday season, and who better to walk us through this than Dr. Steve Craig from Craig Counseling Services. Dr. Craig, what do we do?
You should talk about every subject the whole time at family gatherings. Everything's right. Open, right?
Just break the ice right away.
Right. Go right at it. All right. This is one for that. Dr. Steve, I'm newly engaged and struggling with my fiance and her family. Now that we're engaged, her mother has invited my family to all their holiday events. She invited them for Thanksgiving and was offended that they didn't take her up on it. And when we left her house on Thanksgiving to go to my mother's house for the second dinner, she made snarky remarks to my fiance, her daughter, that this wasn't right. Now that Christmas is here, her mom has a big dinner every Christmas Eve, and then everyone, all her three sisters, come over at noon on Christmas Day, and everyone is supposed to be there. But we are planning on going to my family on Christmas Day. Last week, my fiance had lunch with her mom to tell her this, and then came home in tears, wondering why my family was so unwilling to be part of the family. And maybe we shouldn't even get married if we were going to be like that. Apparently, her mother feels her invites are rejected and feels like we are making my family a priority and wrecking their long-held traditions. My aunt fiancé told me that I needed to appreciate all her mother does and how important these things are for her, and that my family was isolating themselves. What do I do? This should be bolded. What do I do here? If I agree to this, I will be blowing off my mom. But if I don't, I'm starting out on a terrible foot with my new in-laws. Mm. Chris is smirking like he's been there before.
This is a no-brainer. This is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
The problem here lies with his soon-to-be mother-in-law. It's a wonderful thing to extend an invitation. It's a wonderful thing to be able to have a special time with your future in-laws or your family, and getting everybody together is a wonderful thing. But that wanting or be willing to invite them to a special dinner like Christmas dinner nullifies everything that they have going on and all of their family traditions. And I don't see how there is any correlation of we don't like your family or they don't like us, or all of a sudden we're starting off our marriage on a bad foot. Do this on a normal Tuesday. Have them over for dinner and a glass of wine on a Wednesday. You don't need to do this on a major holiday for the first time and disregard everybody else's traditions.
Okay, wait, hold on. So then, I'm gonna challenge Chris.
Okay. Right?
So what do they do then? Because now you're this young guy, his mm-hmm. wife is saying this, and it's about her mother.
Mm-hmm.
So now, I mean, because I agree with everything you said. What are you going to say?
Here's what you say. You go,
she's terrible.
No. No, you go, look, I would love to get everybody together, and I think we should do that. And my parents have nothing against your parents. They have their traditions on the holidays that they also want us to be a part of
mm-hmm.
that maybe are not the same as yours. So let's do this a different day. Let's do it for New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. Let's do it for another thing that we can get everybody together and have a nice time and enjoy each other's company.
But right. My mom Chris doesn't is
sleeping
want
on. Chris is sleeping doesn't... on the couch.
I'll die on that hill. I got no problem with that.
He's on the couch. What are you doing?
She's gonna say, my mom doesn't want to do it on those days. She wants to do it on the days she's been doing it.
Well, then you throw balls back in her court.
Well, to me, it's sit down and talk and compromise. I mean, you know, for me, my mother-in-law have you know, certain things going on Christmas and New Year's Day. My family had certain things, and we compromised. We ended up at one place one half of the day and went to the other place the other half, and we would switch it. The next holiday, you know, we go over this person's house this part of the day, and we go over to my family's house part of the day. We sat down and talked about it and had some communication. That's what I would do, and that's what I've done, and that's what we've been doing, so.
I feel like this is a tale as old as time, like the young couple forms and now you try and blend all the families together. But the young couple has to create their own traditions.
They
decide what they need for their family and they move forward. If they say to one mother, we're not doing it this way, that's okay.
Yes.
If they say now we're hosting at our house, that's okay too.
Yes.
But they're the new couple forging a new life.
And right. And that's what we'll talk about. But then the problem lies in the couple has to understand that that's their job. But the in-laws on both sides have to really understand that too, because then if they don't, they're putting undue pressure on this couple.
Yes.
So it really starts with the in-laws. Because the
wait till they have kids too.
I know. Right.
And look, no. Everybody wants to have those special connections with you around a special time of year.
Yeah.
It's very normal.
But that's why it's so important right now for this couple to understand that when you're getting married, you're not just building this life together and I love you and you love me and whatever, is that you are now building boundaries around the family that you're creating. And if you don't do that, you have to recognize that you have to do that just as much as everything else right here and right now, because there's like family A and family C, but you're creating B.
Yes.
And if you don't start putting boundaries around that, you're doing too much of A or too much of C. And so you guys have to defend that and understand that's your job. And the families often don't. There's so many times that I had a family in my office a few months ago that where they loved that their daughter was, or their son was marrying this woman and she was a different religion. I forget, let's say that they were Catholic and they were Jewish and he was Catholic. Okay. And they're like, we love him, he's great, everything's fine, whatever. Okay, but you realize that the kids might not be bar mitzvahed. And they might not be whatever. And they freaked out. Oh, no, that's not happening. I mean, he can marry in here, but we're still going to do everything that our family does. Uh-huh. They're going to come to, no, that's going to be a problem. And so when I have people in my office who are getting married, they'll often say, well, we're in love, and that's why we're getting married. I'm like, are you ready to actually, do you understand you have to build a family? And to do traditional stuff like if your daughter's boyfriend comes and asks for your hand in marriage, it's not just saying, I want to now be part of your family and all your traditions. You're mm-hmm. saying, we're going to build our own.
Sure.
Are you supporting that she now can go have her own family? Or are you thinking, great, you come and do all of our stuff? Huge pressures for the holidays and for young couples when the in-laws don't understand that.
Well, also in this scenario, does the fiance woman understand it too?
Right. She got lost in her mom there when she went to lunch, because mm-hmm. then she's not actually being strong enough to say, mom, and it's her job.
Yes.
She can't have the fiance say, here's how we're going to do it now.
No.
Right.
That's a problem. So she's got to go to her mom and say, we need to build our own traditions. So she needs to be strong enough to build that bond, that family B that they're creating. And that's really what's hard, is that mom doesn't get it, so she's got to break that with mom. Hard, really hard.
Well, we're so close to Christmas. If people haven't done that yet, next year they're going to do it. They're going to build the boundaries next year.
That's exactly right. Already set for now. We're going to do it next year.
Avoid it until December 20th next year.
thank you, Dr. Steve. I know these are issues a lot of families are facing, and we appreciate it.
Good to see you guys. Have a good holiday.
You
Craig
too.
Counseling Services in Bloomfield Hills. More to come on JR Morning.
It has been a long debated topic. You know, it's not there's no debate that Elf is a Christmas movie. Or Miracle on 34th Street, Christmas movie. The Santa Claus, Christmas movie. But Die Hard has been at the center of this controversy for a very long time. And for whatever reason, it feels like every year around this time, it pops back up. You got news outlets doing stories on this. Everybody wants to weigh in. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? There are people that say yes. There are people that say no. What do you say? 800-859-0957. Jamie.
I think it's an action movie that just happens to be at Christmas time, and it's not a Christmas movie.
I have a question.
Jason.
Is Home Alone a Christmas movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
So in the context of that, then, Die Hard is a Christmas movie, too, because it has bad guys. It's set at Christmas time. Home Alone could easily be set at another time, too. Like, remember, we talked about this last week. The McAllisters could be going on a 4th of July trip and happen to have their home burglarized.
Yes, but they are going on a trip because it's a Christmas gift.
And John McClane is coming to be with his wife for Christmas time.
Yeah. The movie takes place on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
It's during a holiday party.
Mm-hmm.
You got Christmas music all through the movie. You got the plot happens because it's Christmas and John McClane is in L.A. trying to reunite his family for the holidays. And the movie, the core themes of the movie, very Christmas adjacent, you know, family and sacrifice.
Your analysis.
What are you doing over
this
there?
This is tremendous.
You tell him,
Roger Ebert over there?
No, well, you know, I actually watched the movie the other day. I actually saw the movie the other day, and I said, I know we're probably going to talk about this because I hear that, you know, people talk about this all the time. So I said, let me just really pay attention here and see what's going on. And that's kind of what
I watched both Home Alone and Die Hard, and I go, you know what? This is the same movie. It's the same movie.
Well, no,
it's
just got explosives. Do you know who says it's not the same movie? Macaulay Culkin has weighed in. He says about Die Hard being a Christmas movie. No, it's not. It's based around Christmas, but if it were also St. Patrick's Day, it would still work. But you couldn't do that on Home Alone on Memorial Day. It doesn't work that way.
Sure it would.
See, I am with Macaulay Culkin here. Although he does call himself the godfather of Christmas.
No, you could
not.
So
I don't know.
Because
I don't know if that works.
You could not, because the heartwarming parts about it are when he misses his family at Christmas, he puts the little tree up, he goes to that Santa Claus and asks him for advice. You couldn't do that at Memorial Day.
You could think of something.
You can do it on Easter.
What, does he go see a leprechaun? What do you want him to do?
I want to see that, yeah.
You can do it on Easter. Go see the Easter Bunny.
Different vibe.
I don't know. I don't think you could do it. It's why I don't think it's a Christmas movie.
Right.
Well, Stephen E. D'Souza, who's the screenwriter of Die Hard, says it qualifies as a Christmas movie. That's what he said.
You know? I mean, okay.
I mean, you know, and I think, you know.
Did they use any wide angle lenses on that movie?
There were some action parts that says Christmas better. I'm thinking about it.
What says Christmas better than the dead body in the elevator with the shirt on?
I mean, that's true.
Exactly. Come on.
That's true. That's true.
We get together, have a few laughs.
Whoa.
I'm gonna say Die Hard's not a Christmas movie.
That's my opinion. I'm a no.
Jason is a hard yes.
Yeah. I'm a yes.
Well, I don't know where Lloyd is on this.
No, you know what it is? Is Home Alone and Die Hard could each just be movies that are set during Christmas time, not necessarily a Christmas movie.
But see, I don't think they agree with that.
No,
no, and I get it. No, Home Alone has more Christmassy tone to it, of course.
Yeah.
But you gotta
I still think it could work other times of the year.
And you're a yes.
I'm a yes.
You're a yes.
It's, you know, it all happens on Christmas and theme. It's a holiday party, all of that, you know, Christmas music, you know.
You want to do the list now?
It's just not fluffy and cute and stuff. You just got bombs.
Like I said last
week. You just got bombs and machine guns.
That's it.
Like I said last week, it doesn't have to be a Lifetime movie to be a Christmas movie.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yes.
Although I do love a good Jim Hughes movie. Hallmark movie, Lifetime movie. I love them.
Just a girl from a small town.
Just a girl from a small town who's visiting for the holidays.
Yeah.
Runs into an old flame. You know, she's just.
We get together, have a few laughs.
Working at the family store.
Yeah.
They meet unexpectedly. The snow falls. It's very magical.
I've got some lists from you. A poll, actually, from the AP NORC poll, okay? 6 in 10 Americans say cash or gift cards are very acceptable as holiday presents, but they're much less likely to say that about a gift that is purchased or secondhand or regifted. So are you guys okay with cash as gifts?
Receiving or giving?
Yeah.
This is giving.
I mean, my oldest granddaughter, she's a cash person.
How old is she?
16.
That makes sense.
She says, give me the cash, Papa. Yeah. The other grandkids, they're like, no, I want something.
Yeah.
But
they're younger.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
They are.
As the giver, you're into it.
Yeah, as the giver. Yeah.
I'm going to say no on that as well. I just, there is zero effort there. Zero.
You're not even going out to buy the gift.
No, you could buy the Christmas card on Amazon.
Yeah.
And make one stop at the bank and you're done.
And see for my granddaughter, that's how she wants. She don't want Papa to buy her nothing.
She wants to buy
clothes and stuff, and she has her own style. She knows what she wants. I just need the money, Papa.
Okay, but couldn't you say, where do you like to buy your clothes?
Yeah, I could. But
could I get you a gift card from that? I mean, at least there's a little thought there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could do that.
But she doesn't want that.
No, she wants to be able to, you know.
Do her own thing.
Yeah, I might not see something in this store that I usually go into. I want to go into this store and get it, you know.
Apparently, it could be an age thing. The poll found that about 2/3 of Americans under 45 say cash is a very acceptable holiday gift, compared with 55% of adults age 45 or older. Another part of this is staying up on New Year's Eve. How many people do you think are doing that for the ball to drop?
I think it depends on how old you are.
We try our best.
I try. We try. Me and Marie
now,
try.
Here's what we do with the kids. On, like, YouTube,
yeah,
they have, like, little video countdowns.
Uh-huh.
So we'll throw on one of those.
Okay.
You know, we'll do the whole thing. We'll make the snacks and the decorations and the poppy things and the
sparkling grape juice.
Yeah, you'll just do it early. You
know? Blow horns, and we'll do it at 8 o'clock.
Gotcha.
8 o'clock, we fire it up. Ball drops. Happy New Year. Time for bed.
But do you go to bed?
I've been known to fall asleep. Now, I will try my best to stay up.
So you're trying and you're trying.
And I'm trying. Usually our kids call and wake us up and say, Happy New Year. Yeah. That's how we should
I will say, it was a couple of years ago. Stephanie and I were on the couch watching, you know, Dick Clark's or whatever. Uh-huh. And, you know, all the musical acts come up and I'm like, do you know any of these people? She's like, no. And I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah, you've lost
We've
touch.
Reached old status. Where I'm
but
like,
you're very young.
Who is this BTS you're talking? This is crazy. What are they saying? You know, it was wild.
Here are the stats. 44% of Americans say they won't stay up to greet 2026. About half 44? Of U.S. adults age 45 or older won't make it to midnight.
Wow.
Compared with around 1/3 of adults under age 45.
Do you stay up?
You I'm are 46, under 45. I won't make it. You are younger than that.
Look.
What are you doing?
I get beat down.
You've got young
kids. These kids, they're draining.
Yeah, they are.
So no, it's very hard for me. I'm like, what time is it? 9:30? Boy, it's
past my bedtime.
Time to go.
I'll probably fall asleep.
You'll probably fall asleep too. All right, we'll take a break. We have more coming up, including the Fisher Houses of Michigan. They help veterans and their families during this time of year. The Fisher House in Detroit, next to the John Dingell facility, is open. We'll talk to Kate Melcher, the executive director, next on JR Morning. You know, a few years ago, I emceed a wonderful event downtown with Fisher House Michigan. And Fisher House is a wonderful organization. They build these beautiful homes next to VA hospitals. And so when veterans and their families need to come to get a major surgery or need to be looked at, they can stay at the Fisher House free of charge. They don't need to buy a toothbrush. They don't need to buy food. Everything is taken care of. And it is a truly wonderful tool in our tool belt here in the city of Detroit to now have a Fisher House here in the city of Detroit, just opened in February. And Kate Melcher is the executive director of Fisher House Michigan and joins us this morning. Kate, it's so good to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me here. I love talking about Fisher House and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, and now when we get into the holiday season and, you know, things transform in the house there as well.
Absolutely. You know, when it comes to medical care, you know, medical crises, they don't care what the calendar says. Mm-hmm. So the Fisher House is open 365 days a year. And, you know, we're there to welcome the families of hospitalized veterans. Anytime a veteran's got to be hospitalized, if they've got people that need to be with them to advocate for them, we want to be able to take care of them. The Fisher House has 16 family suites right there on Woodward Avenue on the 7600 block. And like you mentioned, everything that those caregivers need, we want to lift all of those burdens. So the only thing that the families and caregivers have to worry about is their veteran that's in the hospital.
And there are a couple Fisher Houses now here in our state. There was one already in Ann Arbor serving the families there, and now this one here at the John Dingell VA Medical Center.
That's right. The one in Ann Arbor opened, believe it or not, during the pandemic. And even though it opened during the pandemic, that house has still hosted more than 13,000 people. Mm. So we know that the need is really great here in Southeast Michigan. The quality medical care that veterans are getting, both at VA Ann Arbor and VA Detroit, and the partner hospitals in the community, you know, a lot of times the VA, if they don't have a specialty service, they'll refer out. They'll refer to Carmanos or Beaumont or Henry Ford. So the VA is a bigger network than maybe we think about.
That's a great point. And then, you know, we've seen the transformation of the city of Detroit, and it's starting to branch out even further than just downtown. Talk about, you know, where the house is located and what the neighborhood's like.
Absolutely. First of all, I will tell you that unless it is close and unless it is safe, it's not a Fisher House. So the Fisher House, like I mentioned, is on the 7600 block of Woodward. It only takes two turns to drive from the Fisher House down to the Dingle VA. And like you mentioned, there really is a resurgence in Detroit, you know, with the draft coming in and, you know, all of these wonderful, you know, national events that have been happening in Detroit. I love being in the city and it feels so alive. But in the Fisher House especially, you know, it's easy access from the freeway. The house itself is completely gated. You park behind a gate. If you're not comfortable driving in the city once you arrive, we've got volunteers that will help shuttle you from the house down to the hospital. We truly want people to feel comfortable being in the city and helping their veteran access the quality health care that they've earned.
Who are the people that come to the Fisher House? Now, I know you said the families of the veterans, but give us an anecdote of how this really, you know, helped them in a big way instead of paying for housing costs.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when, gosh, I've got 13,000 stories.
Right.
<you know?
laughs> Pick one. Go. You know?
Well, you know, we hear a lot of stories of veterans that are kind of, you know, stubborn. A lot of us veterans are, you know. He earned more or, you know, she lost a leg and, you know, she needs the care more than I do. But the families of the veterans, you know, they will step up and say, you know what, let's ask anyway. Let's see if you're eligible for this health care. You know, so we had a Vietnam era veteran who had a cancer diagnosis and, you know, had kind of accepted his fate because, you know, he needed some specialty health care that was only available down here in Southeast Michigan. And it wasn't reasonable for him to travel from northern Michigan down here to get that specialized care. Mm. Well, somebody told his wife about Fisher House. And she said, oh, we're going. I can go with you. It's free. We don't have to worry about lodging. We don't have to worry about meals. I don't have to pay for parking. We don't have to pay for anything. All I have to do is be there for you while you get your treatment. We're doing this. Honey, you're saying yes. And good husbands will say yes. And that's exactly what he did.
Well, I think what Fisher House provides is magic. It is a security blanket, you know, hearing from people who, you know, the stubbornness exists, but also, you know, the money factor does factor in. And so when they understand that they can go and truly just focus on the care of their loved one, of somebody who served our country, whatever those needs are, it's a fantastic jewel in the city of Detroit's crown. As so many vibrant things are happening, it's so wonderful to have that facility here in Detroit.
And how do people donate if they would like to make a donation? And I would assume a lot of people like to donate in the name of someone. Mm-hmm. Like I'm thinking about that, like my grandfather who served.
Absolutely. The best way to start is to go to fisherhousemichigan.org. There's a ways to give page there, and you know you can donate by writing a check, donating online, ways to donate stock, or you know your required minimum distribution from your IRA, donating your time. There's 1,000 ways to get involved, but also importantly on that page there are links to both the VA Detroit and VA Ann Arbor Fisher Houses to show people how to access the resource. We find that Fisher House is often the best kept secret in the veteran space. So not only do we want people to, you know, donate in the ways that I describe, but we also would love people to give us the gift of gab.
Yeah.
Tell a veteran in your world, tell a veteran spouse in your world that the Fisher House exists and how to access the resource.
Yeah. And just knowing that it's available, knowing that it's there for them and for their families as they go through, you know, the medical procedures that they need. Kate Melcher, who is also a veteran, every time we talk, I say thank you for your service, not only
yes,
for our country,
you.
But for what you're doing for veterans still through Fisher House, Michigan. God bless you. Have a Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You too. Happy holidays to you both.
It's a wonderful organization here locally, and they do some great work for those that that gave a lot. For us.
Yeah, and having a place where the families can go is so important.
Yeah, and you know, like we mentioned earlier, it's like it's a joyous time, it's a wonderful time. You know, you get to spend time with your families, but not all families are complete because you've got active military overseas.
Oh yeah, like me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you.
Yep.
So, what is your daughter like? What's her? What has she got going on?
You know, she's
next couple of days.
No, she's working.
She's working.
That's
working
classified, Chris. He can't
yeah.
tell.
Yeah.
You.
Oh, sorry.
She's working.
She's working. She's just
yeah.
Oh, wink.
There
working.
You go. Working.
Yeah, but I mean, again, it's like you'd yeah. love to have them home.
But we
for the
FaceTime
holidays,
her,
right?
And you know, yeah. we talk to her. You know, when yeah. she lets us know when she has the time, and we do that.
And it can be difficult for a lot of families because you just can't get everybody together.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And
people are gone and people are.
Right.
I did that Christmas on us.
Yes.
Uh-huh. WJR. Yep. And one of the folks, like their dad of this little boy, he's not going to be home for Christmas. And how tough that is for the little boy, the wife who's holding it all down here. So, yeah we're thinking of all those families.
Yes.
Yeah. All those families. All right. We'll take a break. 8 o'clock hour coming up. Can't wait to talk to Archbishop Ed Weisenberger, who took over this year. For the Archdiocese of Detroit. We'll talk to him. Also, what's the best gift you've ever given or received? All that and more next on JR Morning. All right, 8 o'clock hour. Little Peanuts action for you.
Love it.
Watched this movie again the other night, actually. Haven't seen it in years.
Yeah.
Still a great movie.
It is.
I haven't seen it in a really long time.
I will say, I kind of forget. Lucy is very mean. And the way they treat poor Pigpen and...
Oh, I got something to show you in the break, but...
And what's the other guy with the blanket? Linus?
Linus.
Boy, I mean...
It's a tough world out there.
It was the epitome of bullying. And these kids are brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Well, it's a classic also. meanwhile, you know, you remember all the turmoil around what the parent company of what is now... FanDuel Sports Network, the channel that carries all the Red Wings and Pistons and Tigers games. Well, they are in some more trouble. And the parent company is in negotiations with a London-based streaming company. I don't know how you pronounce it. DAZN, D-A-Z-N. And there are talks that they could be sold mid-year, that if there are... issues with this, you know, who's going to be able to control the majority stake in this Main Street Sports, which was formerly Diamond Sports, which owns Fox Sports Detroit.
Right, exactly.
FanDuel Sports Network.
Uh-huh.
That you could, I mean, we might be in a blackout again. And you're talking about, you know, a Pistons team that's lost three games.
Right.
A Red Wings team that's in first place and has a defenseman who is in the chase for the Norris Trophy. I mean, you've got really good teams now, and that would make people very upset.
I don't think the teams will let that happen. They'll Mm-mm. figure something out here, but this has been like an ongoing issue with sports networks and things, especially here.
Yes.
Well, and really all around the country.
Yeah.
And they're talking,
and
you
like
know,
who can see what, where, what time.
Right.
Right.
And Tony Paul in his piece talked about, you know, the boon it was for these networks to have the rights to these teams, mm-hmm. to be able to broadcast mm-hmm. these games. You're talking about not even 10 years ago that they were making boatloads of money. And in the span of a handful of years, I mean, it has absolutely plummeted. And it doesn't help that there are so many different options now. And more, you know, leagues, college football being one, the NFL being one, where they're making certain games available only on streaming
Prime
platforms.
Or, yeah.
Prime, Netflix. Lions are going to be on
Netflix on Thursday.
On Christmas Day.
Yeah.
So it's... You're moving everything around and the money isn't quite following.
Sticking in the sports realm, DK Metcalf, we saw what happened, that altercation with a fan, and it looked like he punched him or tried to punch him in the face. Well, the league has ruled Metcalf's actions violated league policy that specifies that players may not enter the stands or otherwise confront fans at any time on game day. And if a player makes unnecessary physical contact with a fan in any way, that's unsportsmanlike conduct. Well, Metcalf will be suspended now. They've decided that he will be suspended 2 games, which is tough for the Steelers, tough for my fantasy. And I know no one listening cares about either of those things.
So there were reports that this fan either used a racial slur at DK Metcalf, that he
talked
used a derogatory word for his mother, that what drew this response from DK Metcalf. The fan says, I didn't do any of that. He said he called him by his real name, DeKalen Zacharias Metcalf, and that's what threw him over the
edge. These two have had an issue before, though.
It sounds like that
there
was some sort of altercation.
When he was on a different team. when yes. he was on a different team, they had a issue before.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's going on with that. But then I saw, too, that one guy was commentating, and they had a different angle of what went on. And he says, you know, if he called him a slur and talked about his mom, he did it really fast.
Right.
Because the way it happened, it was so right. quick. They said he did it really fast.
I mean, look. The fan has refuted that. He said, I never did
He's
any of that.
He's got a Michigan thing. Law firm representing him yes. now.
Right. And, well, I mean, feels like there's a lawsuit coming.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you can't get punched in the middle of a game by a player.
Right. That's assault.
But, boy, it's a bad look. And I'm surprised it was just two games, quite frankly.
And there's only two games left, right?
Only two games left.
I mean, the regular season. I mean,
correct.
You know, yeah.
Which means he would be available to return January 5th, which is playoffs.
Yep. Playoffs. Okay. Good news for the mayor elect. Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan set to close out his time in office with a strong financial news. He's going to have a press conference later today, and he's going to announce that he's leaving the city with a budget surplus topping $100 million. Now, a recently completed financial audit of the 2024-25 fiscal year shows that the surplus grew significantly from a projected $60 million in September to more than $100 million today. And Duggan says the increase reflects the disciplined budgeting and decisions made throughout the year. Now, the announcement will be made at the Detroit Public Safety headquarters later today. He'll have Mayor-elect Mary Sheffield with him and some city finance leaders. And how the surplus is ultimately used will be up to the incoming administration, making it, you know, one of the first major financial decisions for Mayor-elect Mary Sheffield. So she's being left, you know, in good hands as far as financially, $100 million surplus. So we'll see what happens. You know, they've had 12 balanced budgets since Mayor Duggan was the mayor, and we'll need to keep that going. And, you know, he really, you know, started from nothing because we came from bankruptcy to where
he started
in
the hole.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So we'll see.
Are you going to buy a Powerball ticket?
No.
Still no.
Mm-mm.
Nobody won again, $1.7 billion.
Yeah,
they draw on Christmas Eve tomorrow.
That's like the argument when people are like, well, someone has to win. I'm going to get a ticket because maybe it could be me. No, someone doesn't have to win. It can roll over.
It can roll over.
Which is why your chances are even worse.
But somebody's going to win eventually.
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 Yeah. I mean, you had two people win $1 million here in Michigan at the last drawing.
That would be nice.
You know, you had two. We'll and one.
A million.
And
right.
One in Gross Point, you know, so.
Could have been you.
If I played. We were talking about Christmas songs earlier and the list and what have you. You should go to WJR.com and listen to the list that Chris found on Billboard. We talked about Mariah Carey because that was number one and like how much she makes every year.
From
I
that
found
song.
That answer. Do you want to guess?
She could live off of that.
I mean, I like this song.
Just that song.
She made, it was released in 1994 and she made $60 million then. Okay. But there's an annual royalty that she gets every year because this song is played everywhere all the time.
Sure.
It's omnipresent.
Sure.
$2.5 million every Christmas.
Wow. Nice piece of change, man. On top of all the other stuff that she does.
How will she feed her family?
Oh, my God. I'm shutting it off now.
That's unbelievable.
That's according to The Economist. Okay, 2.5. But the New York Post has estimated the number to be even higher at $3 million annually.
That's what a jackpot.
When you can, you know, end of the year, get a nice little check, man.
Well, but you know it's coming.
Right. It's guaranteed.
Like, it's not coming.
No, it's guaranteed. And it could, depending on the year, it could be a little more.
It doesn't matter how many tariffs are in place, what the economy looks like.
No.
That song's getting played.
Yep.
Have you guys ever heard how much the cast of Friends makes, syndicated, the show syndicated, how much they make?
No, but I'm interested.
It's like $5 million a year.
They were making, I think at the end, like $1 million an episode.
Which was like a huge deal back in the day because they all banded together to get their deal.
Yeah. Yes. But my goodness, that's a boatload of money.
Yeah, man, Mariah got lucky.
Look,
gift that keeps on giving.
All we got to do is we'll come up with a viral song, we'll sing it here, and then we'll just watch the money flow.
Yeah, we'll put it out every Christmas.
That's right. That's
And it'll be in a Geico commercial in like 15 years.
That's exactly right. We're going to talk to Archbishop Ed Weisenberger next here on JR Morning. Don't go anywhere. You know, Jamie, I'm Catholic.
Same.
You're Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Is Olivia, like, curious more about the real reason behind Christmas?
She's not still very quite young. There yet. I do know one of the times we took her to Mass recently, really loud, leaving communion, she goes, "Bye, Jesus."
Yes.
So she understands Jesus a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and the voice you hear on the other end of our line is Archbishop Ed Weisenberger, who joins us. It's great to have you on.
I am delighted to be on the air with you. How old is your little girl?
She's about 3 and a half.
3 and a half. I always start the Christmas vigil the same way. After the opening prayer and everybody sits down, I remain standing and I say, "Parents, there are a lot of children in this church, and there's a lot of excitement, and there's probably going to be some noise, and there's probably going to be some talking and movement. And if that happens, I absolutely insist that you leave those children alone. This is their night, not yours." "And if I see any parents scolding children, I guarantee you will get coal in your stocking in the morning."
But you know what? I will tell you, because my two boys are 7 and 3, almost 4. Uh-huh. And, you know, we try to be very cognizant of other people that are there to pray,
sure,
that are there to, you know, ring in the birth of Jesus Christ. And so we do try to be cognizant of that. But that's what we say
sometimes
in our church, too.
They
say, leave them here.
I want those people to be cognizant that this is a special night, especially for children, special night for all of us. But let's just let them enjoy themselves and have a really wonderful experience in church, embracing them as our own children. And so I look forward to that Mass every year. I don't always do midnight, but I always like to do at least one children's vigil Mass. It's just part of the highlight of my Christmas experience.
Well, that's really sweet. And we're very much looking forward to the Christmas season. You're new here in Detroit. You came this year.
I am.
What do you think so far of the Archdiocese of Detroit? And are you enjoying your time here?
I'm loving it, and I'm always afraid people will think I'm just saying that because it's politically correct, but so help me God. I'm just delighted to be here. I've received an incredibly welcome, a warm welcome. I've been happy in previous assignments. I always say I don't have a whole lot of talents, but trying to bloom where I'm planted might be one of them. But I just found I was very, very happy in Kansas. I was happy in Arizona in the desert. And now I'm delighted to be here. I find it a little funny. Everyone's thinking I'll be terrified of the winters, but I studied canon law for 2 winters in Ottawa, Canada. And
so this is old hat for
winters,
you. You'll be fine.
Oh, this is old hat. And I was in Belgium for 4 years, which is quite north. And their winters, you've got that freezing cold sleet every day, just about. And so, no, winters don't frighten me at all. But, you know, I just sense the city itself is on this incredible rebound. The downtown area is beautiful. Neighborhoods are being rebuilt. It just seems like there's a lot of excitement in the community. And to be here at this particular time, I just feel very blessed.
You know, the Christmas season, we celebrate the birth of Jesus. And does that meaning change for you depending on the year, depending on the circumstances? Or is it a steady feeling that you feel around this time of year?
I would say for me at this point in my life, it's more the steady feeling. I just feel that so many people throughout my lifetime, I think it's one of the blessings of Christmas is you look at the blessings of the present, but you also look at where you've been led by that newborn king throughout your life. And one of the joys of getting a little bit older is to be able to look back and see that progression of life. And so when I do face Advent and then Christmas every year, it's a time that gives me pause to remember the newborn king and the life that he came to give us. I always say we maybe don't think of it that way, but Easter and Christmas are sort of the two bookends. God steps into creation at Easter to redeem us with great love. And then it comes to fulfillment at Easter. And so in a sense, this is the beginning of the great story. And now we live it until we celebrate the resurrection.
Well, for those of us who are Catholic and those of us who are not, who are listening right now, do you have a blessing for us? I mean, it seems like it's been a tough time around the world recently. A blessing for 2026 and for the Christmas season?
Absolutely. I'll say a little prayer with us, but I would say We recently hosted the Patriarch of Jerusalem, Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballo, and many people while he was here, because he's dealing with the crisis in Gaza and he's dealing with the crisis in the West Bank and trying so hard to be a man of peace and healing. And so many people ask him, what's the answer? What's the answer? What's the answer? And he said something very beautiful while he was in Detroit. He said, the answer is not so much to figure out how do we fix, but rather how do we live as Christ in the midst of the world today? And how do we do that with great joy? And I find for a man like him who faces so much hardship, mm-hmm. there was a real sense of joy in that man. And that's a real blessing of Christmas for us all. And so whether we're facing the best of times in our families, our communities, our world, or whether we're in a time of challenge or hardship, I think we rise above recognizing that deep, deep joy given to us at Christmas that allows us to live as the people of God.
Well, we appreciate those words, those sentiments. Could you give us a blessing?
Absolutely. Heavenly Father, I ask a blessing upon the great, great community of Detroit and beyond. Strengthen us to be your presence in the world. Help us to recognize your great, great and abiding love for us that came into the world so uniquely 2,000 years ago. Help us to recognize your face in the faces of all those we meet, and give us the joy of being able to reflect your glory to those who cross our paths. And I ask a blessing on our city and our state in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. That was so beautiful. I like this moment on our airwaves just before Christmas. And it's just such a blessing to talk to you. And as Olivia would say, bye, Archbishop.
Okay. Tell Olivia I said hi.
I will do that. I will do that. Thank you.
God bless you.
You're sure welcome.
Thank you so much. And we'll talk again in the new year.
And Merry Christmas to all.
Merry Christmas. Wonderful message.
I found that heartwarming. Yeah. I liked it. I mean, it was a nice Christmas message when, like, there's a lot of bad, but there can be a lot of good, too.
Well, we have some wonderful faith leaders in this area.
We do. And, you know, for him to give a blessing to the city and the state, because, you know, we're going to need it in the new year.
I think we needed it at any time.
Always.
Yeah. Always. I think a good blessing goes a long way. All right, we'll take a break. I'm curious to know what the best gift.
What's the best gift?
Worst gift you ever got. I came across a list. There are some doozies out there.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about it next on JR Morning. All right, tis the season. We've all done our share of Christmas shopping. Still a couple more things to pick up. But it did get me thinking a little bit. Like, what's the best gift you ever got? What's the best one that, like, will always stick out in your memory as, like, you asked for it, you wanted it, and you got it, and it made your Christmas? Doesn't even have to be big, right? Could be something little.
Yeah, I didn't ask for this, but my best gift was a custom suit.
A custom suit?
Yeah.
See, that's the best gift when it's not even in your mind.
It's not even, I had no idea.
And someone gets
I had no idea.
You.
Right.
Yeah. Just came in with a suit bag. And I'm like, oh, you know, maybe a sport coat or something like that. Or a coat. No, it was a custom suit.
That's very cool.
That, you know, the tailor where I get my clothes from, she got with him and he used the measurements from my wedding.
Oh, cool.
And he's used my, I hadn't, you know, really put on much weight since then. And he used the same. He says, if it's an issue, just bring it back and we'll fix it. But yeah.
That's very cool.
Shocked. Very nice.
Very cool.
I've been thinking about this all show. And I think the answer is early 90s when the Barbie Magical Mansion was there.
Good one.
It was so cool. It was just so cool. It's what I wanted. And now I know the backstory of how my dad, like, put it all together with my grandfather, like, for hours. And as I'm a mom now, I realize the magic is created by the parents.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm just, like, even more grateful for my parents now.
But, you know, Barbie was living better than we were, man.
Oh, my gosh.
She had a
it
mansion?
Had, like, back in the day, yes. It had a doorbell that rung.
Yeah.
It had lights that went on and off. It had all the, it was so cool.
Barbie was living good. She had a camper. She had a car. She had a pool.
She had a Corvette.
She had a vet, right. She was living good.
That's pretty good. The one that sticks out to me, and it was just a video game. I just wanted a video game for Christmas.
Okay.
And we go through all the presents and it wasn't there. And I was never a big, like, I was grateful.
Sure.
Right? So I didn't get the game. I was like, bummer. I'll have to figure out how I can buy one or whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Then we get to the stockings and we're pulling out stuff from the stockings. And it was in the last stocking. Thing in the stocking. And I was like, yes. It's the one that sticks out.
That's another thing, like, my dad will do, still does. Like, he plans when the presents are going to go. And, yeah. like, he tries to make big surprises or happen yes. at the end or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, like, previously even to that, this is how my family likes to joke around. They like to do silly things, funny things.
Sure.
My parents, they thought it was very funny. I think it's funny, too, now in hindsight.
Uh-huh.
But, like, I wanted a PlayStation 2, different year.
Okay.
And we go through, again, I'm pretty grateful. I don't get crazy. But, like, wanted that real bad. Open up everything on Christmas, nothing. Nothing, nothing, all day. And then later on, they're like, oh, we forgot one thing. They pulled it out. Mm-hmm. This is hour. We're, like, getting ready to eat dinner. And they're like, oh, we forgot one thing. And it was the PlayStation. I was like, what? It was crazy. Like, you know, it was so.
Just the reaction from you, they probably just loved
that. They loved that.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. What was that one special gift that you gave or you got that just sticks with you forever? It is ingrained in you around this time of year. You always think of it. And then on the flip side, you know, you've got some stinkers too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've given some stinkers. I've told this story a million times. Like, I bought my mom a AC/DC Live in Concert DVD. It was for me. I'm out shopping. You know, I was a kid. I was sure. Maybe in like middle school.
You do that though.
She drops us off at the mall and we're my sister and I are shopping around. I'm like, oh, I think mom would love this. And like my mom liked AC/DC. Like it was fine. Yeah. She would never want that.
Right.
But I bought it and I'm like, she's going to love it. And then like she opened it. She's like, oh, thanks. This is great. And I'm like, we should probably put it in. Like, let's fire it up. Let's see what this thing's about. She's like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think the best gift, you know, we were talking in the break and I said I got gave a engagement ring. But I'm thinking something even more. My mom, God rest her soul, I got her this big blanket. And in the middle of the blanket was her and dad. And on the sides were pictures of all of us with our wives and kids. And
that's tremendous.
The grandkids and everything. And she used to have it hanging up in her apartment, man. It was
very cool.
I have it now, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was that because it was like, here's where the Jackson started with mom and dad, and this is all of the offspring.
That's cool.
And it was really cool. The grandkids, everybody is pictures, everybody was really good. So to me, I love giving that because the look on her face when she saw it, you know.
It's ingrained.
Oh, man, never forget that.
That's very cool.
I like the sentimental gifts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you didn't specify here. It doesn't have to be Christmas, but like on my wedding day, the gifts I gave my parents.
Okay.
Like that elicited a lot of reaction,
right.
Like from my mom and dad.
Uh-huh.
I think I gave my dad like a handkerchief, like thanks for being the best dad and love your little girl, you know, something like that.
And so, he used it right away.
Oh, yes.
Instantaneous
usage.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So like, I just like the sentimental gifts.
Yeah,
they are. Yeah.
Let's go to Ron in Washington. Hey, good morning, Ron.
Good morning and Merry Christmas to everyone.
Merry Christmas.
When I was growing up, I was in the high school band, and I was a drummer. And we grew up with very meager, very simple things. Mm-hmm. And my parents knew I wanted a drum set for Christmas. And my dad and mother explained that, you know, things were tough. There were five children, and they just couldn't afford to buy us or buy myself a drum set. Christmas morning, I woke up. And underneath a sheet in the living room was a new drum set. And my father worked through Christmas and New Year's overtime to pay for that drum set, only because he knew how much it meant to me.
That's really sweet.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, Christmas is a special time. It's not just about the gifts. It's not about the money. It's about the family, the get-together. But that drum set.
It sticks out in your mind,
and it's about drum sets.
Ron, did you get use out of that drum set?
Pardon me?
Did you get good use out of that thing?
buddy, I was in symphony band, symphony orchestra, the marching band. We marched in the J.L. Hudson Parade and all the other parades in Michigan and Ohio. You bet I got it.
Well, that, that paid off.
That away. Your parents probably invested a lot in Excedrin.
Yeah, my dad used to holler up in my bedroom, turn that thing off.
It's wonderful stuff, Ron. Great story. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thank you, and you as well.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
Yeah, the like what goes on behind the scenes. Again, the magic created by the
parents. By the parents, yeah.
And so that's very sweet.
Well, and it's, again, it's getting together for dinner, having that, you know, those traditions.
Yeah.
Like our family, we always opened, because our family lived across the country. Like, okay, we didn't have a lot of family in Michigan. So we would, like, everybody would send those boxes out, you know, a few weeks before Christmas. We'd open them up, we'd put them under the tree, and then Christmas Eve, we would open all of our family gifts to each other.
Uh-huh.
So we'd open gifts from my aunt. They would open them, you know, down in Florida. We would open, you know, we'd do all that stuff on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And then you sit down and you eat these seven fishes, which I hated, but I love it now, right? It's it's part of the
tradition.
Part of the tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the tradition, it's the family, it's the all of that it makes it special.
Yeah, it's all the things and what you remember as the years go on and on and on.
Yes. And want.
Yeah.
Right? You want less things. You want more family. You want
absolutely.
More
fewer things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
That's exactly right. All right. Yes. Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. There's a lot to do, but there's a lot else happening around the Metro Detroit area. We'll talk to JR Stays next here on JR Morning.
All right, it's time now to check in with JR Stays, host of the Daily Detroit podcast. He's always telling us what to do on the weekends. Now I need to know what to do between Christmas and New Year's. I have no daycare, so I have my three-year-old with me for
God 2 bless us.
Weeks. God bless us, everyone.
Yeah.
I need activities, JR. What do you have?
Well, I've got a mix of stuff for you, but I first have a question. Do you like sandwiches?
Who has ever said no to that?
Always. I mean, Joey on Friends, that's his favorite food.
Well, I had to ask, because here's the thing. The tradition in Detroit that is called Sandwich Week is back. Literally, you can stuff yourself with sandwiches with friends in the time sandwiched between Christmas and New Year's. So this is it's wild.
I see what you did there. Yeah.
It was started by a friend of mine, Carlos, some years ago, who had to work over the holidays, but was able to escape his cubicle. You know, we've all had those jobs, right? Where it's like slow, but you still got to be there. Anyway, it's turned into a tradition. I've always made it out to a couple of spots each year. That's kind of the joy of it, is that you can pick and choose. The 26th through the 30th, there are 7 main events. So there's lunch sandwiches and dinner sandwiches in places in Detroit and Ferndale and nearby. And then on top of that, there are 4 side quests with things that are like sandwiches that involve pierogi and stuff. It's wild. I'll have a thing up on Daily Detroit because there's like a lot to go with this one, but it's easy to find the details. If you love all things between bread, it's a great way to also meet new people, because this is happening at specific times. And you know that everyone around you also loves sandwiches, so you all have something to talk about. So I'm all about events that bring people together.
Are there going to be hot dogs there?
Depends on the spot. I'm not sure. I don't have,
is that
I have
a sandwich?
Is a hot dog a sandwich? The age-old question.
That is a good question.
We should ask the people there, because they're the preeminent experts.
I am sure that there will be strong opinions about that.
That's right.
Okay, so available on most days over this holiday week, Candyland is turning Beacon Park in downtown Detroit into a walk-through winter sugar rush. Now,
oh,
this goes
cool.
through January, but as you were saying, you got the kids, you got some time. So there's big light displays, there's a big gingerbread house. This happens from like 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Of course, you know, a little bit after dark is going to be when you're going to want to see all the lights. It's free. It's something cool that, you know, candy cane arches, a snowflake tunnel. I imagine there's going to be tons of picture opportunities. So this is a good one for you in Beacon Park in downtown Detroit. And you can tie it together with some cool stuff, because there's so much new shopping and things to check out down there. So
Isn't Beacon Park where they have that kids' New Year's Eve party too?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been to that. I've done stories on that. It's cool what they do for kids down there. Great idea, JR.
So this one is a little bit out there. This is for ones who are into braving the cold. this one is probably not for the kids, unless, I mean, if you're that kind of parent, if you're adventurous, I guess so. I'm not going to judge you, but I want to give you something out there. Get this. Bike Dearborn has been doing for 54 years a frozen bike ride from West Dearborn at the Bigby Coffee there on Michigan Avenue. They get together at 1 p.m. They roll at 2 p.m. on New Year's Day. It's free and open to everyone. There's support. So, like, if you're, like, an athletic person and you really want to push yourself and do something cool but also cold, I want to throw that out there just because why not? If you ever want to do something different, there's a ton of, like, support and support teams with you. So, like, they have everything planned out. But if you really feel like a cold bike ride, you can do this.
Where do you bike from where to where?
It starts in West Dearborn at the Bigby Coffee.
Uh-huh.
And then they have a route for you that's, like, planned out and cleared out for you.
How long is it? How cold are we going to be?
That's up to the weather, right?
Fair.
Like, a bike ride at, like, 40 degrees, I mean, you need some bundling. I would say, here's the thing. I've biked in the cold before. Gloves. Do not forget gloves. You will.
Those handlebars will get really touchy.
Yeah. That will, and then the wind when you're biking, wear gloves, whatever you're doing with this one. So, you know, this is one, as I said, I wanted to throw it out there because it's a little different.
Jer, we talked about a story about a marathon where people had to stop at Taco Bell on the way as a requirement to run in this marathon. So nothing surprises me anymore. So what? You go for a cold bike ride. That's got to be good.
You know, I would walk that.
Yeah, right.
I would walk that.
Right, exactly.
I'm a very fast walker. That's what I could do.
All right, now, Jer, do you have more?
Well, I was told to bring five.
All right, let's go.
All right, so on Monday over the holiday week, so on Mondays, there are pinball meetups at Barcade Detroit over on Selden Street. I'm recommending this one because a lot of times people don't get a chance to go out on Monday nights during the holidays, like 7:30 to 9:30. But if you're going to be off work, it's something to check out. It's a buck to enter. And, you know, who doesn't love pinball? Like, it's totally nostalgic for me. And if, you know, you're a little bit younger and you don't know pinball, you should know it. It's a lot of fun. I think I like that over the Instagram reels.
He's a pinball wizard guy.
And then finally, this is the perfect week to go to Friday nights at the DIA or just check out the Detroit Institute of Arts in general. There's a bunch of performances that you can go to. There's also some workshops during the week. Like, you can go ahead and make some luminaries. You can do artist trading cards. There's all kinds of stuff for the kids to get their hands on and try. And those Friday nights, I want to mention that because it's so cool because you can do drawing in the galleries. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you've got a kid who's really into, you know, creating stuff, this could be a lot of fun for you.
I like the DIA anytime of day or night. It's so cool. So that's another great idea. Jer Stays, host of the Daily Detroit podcast. Thanks for always giving us ideas throughout the year and happy
New Year.
Did
it again.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Have a great one and see you in the new year.
A lot of great ideas.
He's got good stuff.
Always.
Yeah. He does a wonderful job. All right. So what's on the menu for you guys? Christmas Eve, Christmas Day.
Well, Marie had me go out and buy some ribs because she said it's going to be nice outside. On Christmas Day, so she said she's going to get on the grill. Have some ribs.
Okay,
Christmas
very
Day,
good.
So. Christmas Eve Mass.
Uh-huh.
Sister-in-law's Christmas Eve. And then Christmas Day, great morning. Can't wait for the morning time.
I know.
Of course.
Peak three-year-old during this time.
Yes.
But then we're going to have everyone to our house.
Oh, very nice.
Very nice.
Very good. Yeah, we'll do Mass, and then we'll do Christmas Eve at my mom's. We do Feast of the Seven Fishes.
Okay.
Which you love. You've put it out there that
love.
You love.
Uh-huh. One of my favorite days of the year. Culinary wise.
Yeah.
And then we'll do my father-in-law's earlier in the day on Christmas Eve. We do Christmas morning, obviously at home.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll go Christmas night at my mother-in-law's house and we'll do like prime rib, things like that.
Sure. Okay.
That's our plan.
Yeah.
Not going on. Yeah. We'll be a family too. My brother has an annual family get together every year. Mm-hmm. It's usually the day after Christmas or, it's going to be this Sunday, actually. And all the cousins, the aunts, the uncles. I mean, my mom was kind of the head. She's not here. So he keeps it going. We're going to keep
great.
It going.
That's great. Well, we appreciate you so much. We appreciate you spending your mornings with us.
Absolutely.
Every day. And we look forward to everything that's around the corner in 2026.
Putting up with me and Chris.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right.
Jamie, everybody loves Jamie.
That's right.
Gotta put up
sure,
with us.
Sure, that's right. Sure.
Have a wonderful Christmas, guys.
Yes, you too.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, guys.
And we will see you in. We'll see you next year. See you next year. Yeah. Have yourself a wonderful day. Wonderful holiday. Kevin Eaton, All Talk coming your way.